Trigger warning, the following topic contains information that may be disturbing to some listeners. Welcome back, everyone, to Safe Tea. I am one of the hosts, Steven, and it's great to be back. Jill cannot be with us, but instead we've got a treat for you guys. Sam from Three College Idiots has joined us. Hey, Sam.
Hey, guys. I'm excited to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So before we get started, Sam, just have a question for you. What do Indianapolis, Santa Barbara, Las Vegas all have in common?
I'm not sure. What do they have in common?
All right. What if I threw in Columbine, Parkland, and Uvalde, Texas? So as you might have guessed from the last three, all of these places are sites where loss of life occurred due to an active shooter.
Oh, wow. I would say I'm pretty shocked we're even discussing this.
Yeah, it's a really tough subject to talk about. But given recent history, it's proven that these tragic events don't seem to be diminishing in number. And as we begin to unpack this, let's examine a few facts about it. Number one, the duration of an active shooter event is usually short. Research from the Department of Homeland Security reveals the average duration of an active shooter incident is only 12 and a half minutes, whereas the average time for police response is another 6 minutes. In other words, it takes on average 18 minutes for the police to arrive from the time an active shooter event is reported. And recent tragedies have demonstrated that most shooters will not stop their rampage until police arrive. Second, contrary to popular belief, victims are usually chosen at random. They're not targeted.
Oh, wow. So it kind of seems like at the end of the day, your survival depends on you developing these survival skills and these skills that you kind of hope you never have to use.
Mm-hmm. So here's what a few of the students from Parkland remember from that horrible day.
Okay, could you tell us what happened?
We were just going about class like normal, and we heard shots. It took us a second to realize what was happening, but when they were fired off again is when we started to move and hide. I was stuck between the teacher's desk and her podium, and then I was just hiding until I felt myself get hit. I didn't know how many times. I just knew I was hit. And I tried looking behind me to see if anyone could help me, but all I saw was blood on the floor. So I just kind of turned around, and when the fire alarm went off, I also thought that hopefully, like, they knew what was going on and so that they were coming soon, but I ended up passing out. Mm-hmm. And then,
what's the next thing you remember after you're passed out?
I was in and out of consciousness until I fully woke up that Thursday night, Friday morning.
Okay. So, do you know what happened to you?
Yes.
What happened to you?
I was shot 4 times in my right arm, my right lung, some of my ribs on my right side, and I had surgery on my abdomen.
Okay. And how many surgeries have you had?
Three.
Are there any after effects from your surgeries?
Thankfully, I had a great orthopedic surgeon, so I'm able to use my hand, but I still do have trouble breathing with my lung.
I remember seeing a lot of bodies on the floor. I saw the gunman come out. I saw everything of when the shots went off. I blinked, and then everything just went bad. I started moving left to right, seeing what to do, and then as soon as I went left, I felt like a very strong, I don't really know how to explain it, but like a paintball shot to my right foot, and I didn't even recognize it at the time. I just felt it, and then it went into the cutout to where the bathrooms are. And that's when I saw, my friend there. And then Joaquin was there too.
Joaquin Oliver was in the alcove?
I believe so, yeah.
And who was your other friend?
Tyler West.
Tyler West. So mm-hmm. It was the three of you in the alcove?
Yes.
Okay. Then what happened?
I realized that I was like, I feel something wet in my foot. I don't know what it is. I look down and I see my ankles blown off to bits, obliterated. I stood there, it felt like an hour, just staring at it. I was like, oh my God, what, are you serious? This is happening. I was like, I'm feeling the water, it's like blood, and I'm hearing shots going off, people are screaming. Me and Tyler are terrified. I look at him, and he looks at me, I'm like, we're gonna die, what do we do? And I peek around the corner and I still see the shooter shooting into the classroom. I'm like, I see Joaquin trying to get into the bathroom door, but I know the bathroom doors were locked, but so I told him to stop. We need to figure out a different way to get out. So, I don't think he really heard me or cared, but at that point I kind of stopped and trying to look for an alternative method to see if I could leave. So that's when I looked, see if the gunman was shooting. He still was. So I took the opportunity while he stopped, at least for temporarily, and I darted to cover, to get closer to the exit. And I managed to, as soon as I started running, I was the only person besides the gunman in the hallway at the time, besides the bodies that were on the floor. He started out, since I was running, he targeted me, started shooting at me. I remember hitting the wall, and as soon as I hit the wall, I could see debris from the walls of at least 4 to 5 rounds coming off of the wall. So they aimed at me, I'm assuming. I was like, oh my God. As soon as I did that, the shooting stopped, and then, I don't know, I can't really recall how long I was in that little cover for at the second time, but I managed to, as soon as he stopped shooting, again, run and exit.
It seems like once a situation like this unfolds, it's really hard to know what to do. Everything can be so unpredictable. Is there any way for you to know what to do?
You're right. These are very dynamic events, and each situation is unique. A Google search of college campus response to an active shooter incident reveals that most, if not all, colleges and universities have some written protocol outlining the procedure to follow if such an incident were to occur. For instance, most institutions have a system of immediate notification that is sent to a student's cell phone. In addition, there are many commercial products available to universities that are designed to prepare for such an incident, including cameras with acoustic sensors that can identify the sound of a gunshot, then use AI and geographic triangulation determine the precise location where the shot was fired from while simultaneously alerting campus police. Many colleges even have organized classes and simulated drills offered by law enforcement organizations that give tips on how to survive an active shooter event.
Oh, wow. But what happens if your college doesn't offer those survival classes? What else can students do?
So historically, recommendations for handling an active shooter response were limited to attempting a lockdown. In 2013, additional options like run, hide, fight were introduced as the recommended immediate response.
So what exactly does that mean?
So I may not be the best person to continue to unpack this, and so that's why we're going to rope in some of our favorite experts. First, we have Christy Fogg, a licensed clinical social worker and therapist who specializes in adolescent mental health. You may remember her from a couple of our past podcasts, so this is actually podcast number 5 for you, Christy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me back again.
We also have Hannah Skiba, the public information officer from IU Bloomington Police Department. Thank you so much, Hannah. We're so glad you could join us.
Thank you for the invite.
So I'm going to start off just asking you, what is an active shooter and what does that mean?
So very simply put, an active shooter is an individual who's killing or attempting to kill people, usually with a gun in a highly populated area.
And so, you know, going over other definitions that we may have heard, what does it mean to shelter in place? And is that the same or is it different from something like a lockdown?
So it is really good to know the difference between a shelter in place and lockdown. So first, a shelter in place really refers to when there's instances like severe weather, a natural disaster, or maybe a chemical threat, where we want to shelter in a building to keep ourselves away from that threat. Whereas in a lockdown, that's where we're really going to think about our active shooter situations, where there is a potentially dangerous situation and we need to lock down doors, close the building immediately.
Gotcha. So when we're sheltering in place, that's, you know, think like a tornado warning, that kind of thing. But a lockdown is really, you know, we're getting the police involved. We're worried that there's a dangerous presence in the area. So when we are locking down a college campus, for instance, how big of an area is included in that? Is that one building? Is that the entire campus, the city?
Every situation is going to be very different, and that's something to keep in mind when we talk about active shooters. There is not a one plan fits all scenario. So we are going to start by locking down a larger area first. And when we know that it's safe to shrink that, we will. But we want to make sure that we have the situation under control before we kind of make those changes.
So I've heard of this run, hide, fight. What exactly is that? And does your response really matter if you're like outside or inside a building?
So run, hide, fight is a model that many universities have adopted, and you can kind of compare it to stop, drop, and roll. This is a way that you can help prepare for a situation that hopefully you'll never have to deal with. So first, to break it down step by step, run is the same whether you're indoors or outdoors. The first option that we want you to take is to get as far away from the threat as possible. So if that means you're outside, you see a threat from a distance, run. Run as fast as you can. If you can get inside a building, that's great. If you're indoors and you hear gunshots starting to happen, again, if you can run away from wherever you hear those gunshots, that's the best option. But if you don't have that option, the next thing you need to do is hide.
So talking about the run, hide, fight model, what would you say constitutes a good hiding place?
A good hiding place is one that really makes sure that you are not visible to whoever is doing the active killing or active harming. So if you're inside a classroom, making sure all doors and windows are shut, making sure that your cell phones are silenced, and that includes vibrate. But say you're at a movies or in a mall, anywhere that is a completely enclosed space where nobody could see through a window or a door is going to be your best option.
So when students are hiding, what should they do when police arrive? And how can they know that it's law enforcement and it's not the shooter?
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit confusing at first, because when we have a situation like this, we're going to have law enforcement agencies from all over the city, county, even state that are responding to help. And so they're going to be wearing different uniforms. Some of them may be wearing plain clothes and they may not look like a police officer, but they will be announcing themselves as police officers or as cops. So please try to pay attention to those who are making the announcements and follow what they are asking you to do.
So we've gotten through running and hiding. So when we are trying to run away, what should we do if we come across someone who has been injured by the shooter?
I know our natural instincts as good humans is going to be to stop and try to help them, but your first priority really needs to be to get out of that dangerous situation. Take a mental note of where you see folks that are injured and tell emergency personnel about those people when you're to safety.
So it sounds like this is something where you're not trying to be a hero. It's okay to look out for yourself. You really need to get out of there so you're not potentially creating more issues and another patient for the EMS folks to have to help.
Correct. This is a situation where it's okay to be a little bit selfish. You need to protect yourself and know that we have help, EMS personnel, fire personnel on the way, staged probably right outside the building, that are going to be ready to tend to those victims as soon as it is safe to do so.
So we have tried to run and we can't for whatever reason. All the doors are locked. We can't find a good hiding spot. And now it seems like the last thing is to fight. What does that look like?
This is where there are no rules. You need to fight for your life. anything in an office space or a classroom that you can use as a potential weapon to protect yourself, whether that be a water bottle, stapler, a book, you need to use that to try to distract the killer and hopefully try to get the weapon away from them. Work as a team if you're in a group, and then once you fought off the killer, you can work together to hopefully get them to the ground until police are able to help you.
So we have talked about running and hiding, and we got into fighting a little bit, kind of use whatever you've got, because if it's between you and that active shooter, you don't have a lot of options. You've really just got to do whatever you can. But with respect to fighting, there's this narrative in popular culture that the best way to deal with a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. So some people have permit to carry and they are trained and they might be an asset in these situations, but then when law enforcement comes on the scene, it can be a tough time to figure out who is the good guy with the gun and who is the bad guy with the gun. And this is a tough thing to talk about in general with the political landscape of America, but from your perspective, what should we do if we ever have a gun in this situation? What's the safest thing for us to do when law enforcement arrives?
Sure. It is a tough topic to talk about, but it's good to have the conversation now before any of us could ever be in a situation like this. So whether you are the one who chooses to carry while you're out in public, or you are able to get the weapon away from the attacker, once the threat is neutralized, so once there's no more harm being done, it is really important to have your hands visible to law enforcement as they arrive on scene so that they're able to distinguish that you are not the one causing harm.
You're exactly right. This is something that's tough to talk about, and we're trying to talk as much as we can about preventing injury and preventing death. So stopping this tragedy on the front end is as good as we can get. So talking about preparing and what we can do before this were to happen, let's bring in Christy now. So Christy, what is being done to prepare students for something like this?
So we've kind of covered a little bit of this. Be aware of your surroundings anywhere that you are in, whether you're in a building for school, whether you're in your dorm, whether you're going to the movies or the mall. Watch out for suspicious people and activities. Know your exits wherever you are. Even my daughter's preschool practices intruder drills now. I mean, she's four. And so kids at a very young age now, out of necessity, are being taught how to handle when there is an intruder in their schools. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of preparation being done at an age-appropriate level.
Mm-hmm. And so there can be preparation both intellectually, but also emotionally before something like this were to happen. What about the mental health response after a threat or, you know, incident occurs?
Yeah, so in most situations, there will be trauma therapists that will be made available within hours of the incident. Especially in the state of Indiana, there are actual crisis response teams that will activate after an active shooter. And there are specific therapies that you can do. One, for example, is called CID. It stands for Critical Incident Desensitization. And so that can help with someone who is kind of in that immediate shock, and it helps them immediately debrief. And then I would recommend further therapy long-term after that. But that is definitely some therapies that we can offer that help you debrief what you just witnessed and lived through.
Mm.
So when we talk about preparing for these events, how should we go about preparing for these without creating any anxiety or fear?
So just because your kids don't talk about active shooters, it doesn't mean that they aren't aware. So, you know, I mentioned my four-year-old, they had an intruder drill. And so we recognize that the older that she gets, the more that this conversation is going to evolve and change as we kind of gauge like what information is going to be important for her to know. We don't want to scare her, but we do want to equip her with the skills in order to make sure she can keep herself safe.
And from the university side of this, I think building it into our everyday conversation has been helpful to kind of reduce that anxiety and fear. We're letting folks know that we're prepared at the IU Police Department if something like this were to happen. we are not nervous or scared, but we're prepared. And so we want other people to take those same steps, thinking about what door am I going to go out of if I'm in the art building? What is my alternative route to and from class? Mm. We want them to kind of think about these things beforehand, so it's maybe not as scary as it needs to be, should it ever happen.
We're talking about all the prep before something like this happens. What are the immediate steps you should take after an active shooter event, assuming that you're not injured yourself?
Like you said, if you are injured, you need to seek medical help immediately. From there, if you have any information that you think would be helpful to the police for their investigation, make sure to relay that by calling your local police department. And then 3, really find trusted people that you can help process the event with. It's going to be hard, especially in the first couple days, but really finding a good group of people that you can trust and talk to will be helpful.
Yeah, I would piggyback off of that. When you are ready to talk about it, make sure you're talking about it. Like I mentioned earlier, there will be trauma therapists made available to you. But the number one thing as far as your mental health goes is to take care of you. So if you need to take some time, take some time. If you need to get back to your routine, you can do that too. Every single person responds differently to trauma. So you may have really strong feelings of depression and anxiety and even some PTSD symptoms. You may struggle to sleep, or you may sleep a lot. You may feel extreme grief or sorrow. You may have no appetite. You may have memory loss, inability to focus, lots of crying, flashbacks, nightmares. If there were injuries or fatalities, you may also experience a lot of guilt. So the interesting thing is you may also feel fine. And I say fine in air quotes. You may be numb. You may not even think about it. Everyone's body and brain processes trauma in their own way. So for some people, they may immediately feel somewhat okay-ish, and then the trauma may bubble up weeks, months, or even years later.
Sam, have you had any of these active shooter drills at your university?
I believe last year we had an armed suspect on campus going through, I think, underneath the streets and like...
Was this an armed suspect or was it an armed suspect? Like, was it a drill that we knew about or was this for real, for real?
So, yeah, this was not a drill. This was like an actual armed person on campus. Mm. I remember the first thing I did was call my friends, make sure that they were safe and they knew what was happening because a lot of them were in class. Mm-hmm. And then I called my parents. I remember having like a big, I think it was organic chemistry test that night. And I was really hoping they'd cancel it. But I remember calling my parents and being like, so should I go? And luckily my parents were both like, I don't think you should go. But yeah, just making sure that I was away from the area and making sure everyone I knew was safe was basically my first like immediate steps.
How did you all feel? How did you and your friends kind of deal with that scare in and around when it happened?
A lot of my friends were quite like nervous in the moment. Mm-hmm. And we made sure that we all got to my apartment safe and we stayed there for the whole night basically together. Mm-hmm. And then I know that a lot of my friends, as a result, just have a lot of fear surrounding. Honestly, anytime we get one of those emergency texts on campus, we always text and make sure everyone's okay. But I have, yeah, a lot of friends that are constantly worried about it.
And that's something that, you know, everyone kind of needs to deal with in their own way, whether it's counseling. Some people really aren't at that point yet. Maybe they won't be, maybe with their friends and family. That's something that they can work through. It's definitely not something that is going away anytime soon. And I think having these tough conversations can alleviate some of this tension and some of the fear. And so while this isn't fun to talk about, Sam, thanks for sharing that. I had no idea. That's why we're having these conversations, right? It's to keep it in the front of our mind in a way that's safe and in a way that helps us to prepare mentally and emotionally and physically for these. So hopefully this can be beneficial to someone that's listening.
So Christy, when dealing with the mental health trauma that could occur in the days, months, or years after the event, what should a student do?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, if you survive an active shooter situation, I want you to be very gentle with yourself. You may not function well for a very, very long time after the incident, and this is a normal trauma response. So we all process trauma differently. So again, you may feel fine for a little bit or in shock or numb again, but don't be surprised if it does bubble up at some point. So for example, I have a friend whose children were involved in an active shooter situation over 5 years ago, and one of her children is just now acknowledging how deeply impactful that was on their life. There's not a timeline for trauma. So even if you were not directly involved in the incident, you may still have trauma. You may even have what we call secondary trauma. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you were the parent of a child who was involved in an active shooter situation, even though you weren't there, the fear, the devastating anxiety, the panic that you may have felt in that moment, just trying to find out if your child was safe, that can impact you for years to come. That is trauma as well. Don't feel like you need to qualify to get help. So let me explain what I mean by that. Just because you weren't directly involved or you weren't targeted, it doesn't mean you weren't traumatized. So anyone who is adjacent to the situation can experience primary and secondary trauma. So pay attention to your body and don't minimize any PTSD symptoms, like I mentioned previously, that you might be experiencing. If you find yourself having some anxiety, some PTSD symptoms, some depression bubbling up, I would recommend, you know, obviously finding a long-term trauma therapist. If necessary, start medication. There is no shame. When you go through trauma, it changes your body. It changes your brain chemistry. There's no shame in taking medication to get some help. Lean on your supports. So the people that are you closest to, who you can confide in, if need be, you could also join some support groups. But at the end of the day, please don't let your PTSD symptoms go untreated. Like, it's going to bubble up at some point if you don't acknowledge it and don't deal with it. So take care of you.
It can be so easy to minimize, you know, things that happen to you, especially if you're, you know, saying, well, I wasn't the one that was being targeted, so I have no right to feel bad. And, and then you kind of sweep it under the rug. And as it turns out, you can't just ignore real PTSD and real trauma. Right.
There is a book called The Body Keeps the Score. And basically the whole premise of the book, and it talks all about like the science behind it, but basically our body stores trauma in different places. And so it can come out in so many different ways. And so if you feel like I'm just not okay, like don't minimize that. Like make sure you're seeking help for yourself.
Sometimes you see in the news, this was the profile of the shooter and he was a loner who didn't have any friends, and everyone kind of said that they thought something might have been up with him. And a lot of people can be kicking themselves because they thought they should have done something beforehand. So we were talking earlier that prevention is kind of the best thing that we can do. So is there a way that we can prevent this from happening? Are there any warning signs that we can look out for?
If you do see abnormal behavior from either a friend or maybe someone you don't know very well at all, things like threatening behavior, talks a lot about guns and violence, maybe has a plan for an event like this, you have to bring those concerns forward. We have a team called the Behavioral Consultation Team. Many schools and other universities have the same thing. It is an anonymous form that you can fill out online. You don't even have to add your name to it. And just report what you're seeing, what you're hearing. Just doing that can really help prevent something from happening. And then it kind of flags university officials to say, hey, follow up with this person. Maybe they're not at the point where they're going to be involved in an active shooter, but there may be something else going on with them that we can help get them some resources for.
That's a great point. So that age group of late teens and early 20s is a big age group to develop some mental illness like schizophrenia and bipolar. And if you're not developing it, then maybe those symptoms are just starting to kind of express themselves. So there may be something that can be intervened on, even if it's not a mental illness and it's just that they're having a really rough time. Hopefully this is something where not only you can save the lives of those who may be involved in an active shooter incident, but maybe you can save that person's life too, and kind of help them out and help them to lead a better life.
Yeah, and from a mental health perspective, most active shooters show between like 4 to 5 concerning behaviors prior to an active shooter event, and usually related to like mental health, like a violent intent, and like really difficult interpersonal interactions. So if you're seeing a decline, a mental health decline in someone, and what I mean by that is like changes in their normal behavior and their affect, that is a cause for concern. And so if you're looking from a mental health perspective, I would say absolutely everything that Officer Scala said, like reach out for help. The Homeland Security has that whole if you see something, say something campaign. And I always reiterate that with my clients when they're like, hey, you know, I'm concerned about, I think that so-and-so may be having like a mental health break or whatever. And it's like, hey, if you're seeing something, say something. Like, I'd rather you reach out and it end up being nothing, or I'd rather reach out and maybe someone gets the help that they need. Mm. And you are the catalyst that creates that bridge for them to get the help.
Yeah, I've got a friend, we'll just say her initial is S, but she was taking organic chemistry and she was really showing some signs of deep stress and is really starting to break through into her other areas of life. So it's important to know that we can kind of reach out, even if it is for our friends that we are with on a day-to-day basis. Sam, do you have anything to add?
I just wanted to say, just to drive the point home, not to sound cliche or like High School Musical, if anyone knows what that is, but like we are all in this together.
We are all in this together.
Yes, we are all in this together. I really like hearing the point of if you see something, say something. Because yeah, I think your peers are the people that you see every day. I'm so used to seeing my family when I was in high school, but now at college, I don't really see my family as much, but my friends have become a family and I can identify things in them that maybe their parents can't catch right now or their family can't catch. And being able to feel comfortable going and saying something like, hey, they're not having a great time, or hey, even this person in one of my classes was looking up pictures of guns on their computer during lecture and it was kind of weird. Being comfortable to say that is amazing. And on this like campus, I feel totally comfortable. So
get your head in the game.
Yep, get your head in the game.
You gotta get your head in the game.
I just want to thank Officer Scala so much for her incredible advice. This is a really tough topic, and it's very difficult to talk about. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that our conversation was so great and hearty. And thank you, Christy, for your advice. We know that trauma doesn't end after that active shooter incident is over, and there can be some long-term consequences. And to just get the help you need.
So remember, everyone, the preparations you make ahead of time may save your life. And while each event is different, the reality is that your ability to survive depends on the survival skills you hope you will never have to use. To summarize, pay attention and know your surroundings. Know when to call for help and what to say to dispatchers. If you're inside a building, run, hide, fight, in that order. If you're outside a building, remember to know the alternate routes to get to different classes and try to seek shelter as soon as possible. Know when to shelter in place versus when to run and how this is done, and know what to do when the police arrive. Last, know what to do to help injured victims, but know to do this after you've reached a safe zone.
I'd also recommend that students take a Stop the Bleed class. This may be biased as I am a Stop the Bleed instructor, but this course is an amazing course that's offered by the American College of Surgeons. It works to educate the general public about the 3 easy steps to take in order to save the life of a person with severe bleeding. There are both in-person and online classes available. Check out our website for more information.
Thanks to our guests again, and thank you, Sam.
Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Safety is brought to you by Rachel's First Week. Executive producer, Dr. Angie Feige. Sound engineer, Ben Vauder. And a very special thanks to American Medical Response, NASCAR, and Healthcare Initiatives for their financial support of this podcast. Visit us on Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, and Twitter at hashtag Rachel's First Week. Don't forget the A in Rachel, spelled RACHAEL. We want to hear from you, so contact us at rachelsfirstweek.org. Don't forget to subscribe now so you don't miss a single episode of Safe Tea.